Welcome to the MIR podcast, dedicated to the advancement of ideas and community, starting the conversation of how we can take doing good and make it better. From social enterprise, nonprofits, to sustainable business models, we invite you to share in the conversation we have with our friends and partners. MIR is a product-to-project company where every purchase supports a trackable giving project. Visit MIR.com to learn more about our give. ...2017 marks the year of the bicycle, the 200th anniversary of this two-wheeled machine. As technologies become outdated in moments, it took humans from 3500 BC to the early 1800s for the wheel to become a method of human-powered transportation. Still, there are places around the world where limited resources challenge mobility and opportunity for many. World Bicycle Relief is committed to helping people conquer the challenge of distance, achieve independence, and thrive. MIR owner Brian Pape and WBR president Dave Nicewander share a pour over and a chat for this edition of MIR Live.
Welcome to the show.
Thanks for being here. Great to be here. Thank you.
We're in snowy Seattle.
Yes, the dusting.
Yeah, we had 3 inches last night of snow and everybody freaked out. But fortunately, the roads are totally fine and we've made it here. So, yeah. Do you want to introduce yourself and just kind of give a quick background as to, you've been involved with the organization for a while now,
yeah,
correct?
Coming up on 10 years.
Yeah, wow. That is quite the career.
Quite a while. Yeah. Sure. Dave Nicewander. I'm the president of World Bicycle Relief. For the last 9.5 years, I was over in Africa. So I was actually the first employee of World Bicycle Relief in Africa and had a great time sort of setting up the operations and working through the programming and sort of leading the Africa team over there. So excited in July, came back over to the U.S. to sort of take on the role of president and obviously spend a lot of time back and forth in Africa, but great to be back in the U.S.
Totally.
Yeah.
So a lot of people who either find about World Bicycle Relief through MIR or other organizations, mm-hmm. through SRAM, don't often know the backstory of how it started, FK Day, his experience.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about Stan and FK and their history in bikes and what their passion was, and then 2004 and kind of what the idea was.
Sure. No, great. So FK and Stan Day founded a company called SRAM, S-R-A-M, which based on the idea of shifting gears instead of on the down tubes, doing something on your handlebars, a grip, what came to be the grip shift.
Yep.
And so they started that, the organization, I don't know, 28, 30 years ago at this point. And FK was sort of in charge of product development, and Stan, president and CEO of the organization, have grown it to be the world's second largest bicycle component manufacturer, and have a fantastic range of bicycle componentry, a lot of really fancy stuff that goes on to really fancy bicycles, so titanium and carbon fiber and things that you'll see on a Tour de France type bicycle. And what happened is the tsunami that took place in the Indian Ocean in December 2004, the SRAM and the bicycle industry was sort of looking at things as, you know, as far as a big response to that. Is there something that we can do as an organization and as individuals? And so FK and Stan said, well, what about bicycles? Will bicycles potentially help in that disaster recovery? And so FK and his wife Leah Misbach Day, who's a co-founder of World Bicycle Relief, went in January of 2005 over to Southeast Asia and spent some time on the ground sort of asking with government officials, the development agencies, the relief agencies, you know, a bicycle program that would work. And eventually found a partner and did a program of 24,400 bicycles into Sri Lanka. And what was cool about that program was it was, you know, obviously from the heart, and the whole cycling industry sort of got behind this, sort of the fundraising that went to that. And FK, with his background in product development, knew the supply chain sort of in that area. Mm-hmm. And Southeast Asia has a very robust cycling industry.
Yeah.
And so knew who to sort of work through as far as finding the dealers and finding a locally appropriate bicycle to provide. And about one third of those bicycles went to healthcare workers that were helping in the disaster recovery. One third went to students that had to reconnect with school. And another third went to entrepreneurs. So an example of that be a fisherman that's displaced because of the tsunami that then is reconnecting with his marketplace in the ocean. So that was the origins. That's the genesis of World Bicycle Relief. And what was really great about it is that there was a post-impact study done, monitoring and evaluation about the program, and it showed that it really was effective. I mean, that bicycles really did connect people to healthcare, education, economic opportunities, reducing the cost of transportation, and was this cross-cutting intervention. And with that success and with that measurement, sort of going to then thinking about, well, where can this also be replicated? And the obvious question, or the obvious answer to that question, was Africa. And so that's when our first program was a large-scale program in Zambia, and it was a U.S. government grant program, healthcare program, that was combating HIV and AIDS. And it was compelling for FK and Leah at that point because it was so large-scale. It was 23,000 bicycles. Zambia is a landlocked country. It is the size of Texas, about half the population, and bicycles are culturally appropriate there. But the interesting thing is when FK and Leah went there originally, and there are bicycles on the ground there, there are bicycles in the field, and they're based off the old roadster-style bicycle, double-top tube, black Mamba, iron workhorse bicycle. The challenge is that those bicycles that are in the field are pieces of junk.
Yeah.
The suppliers, the importers in coming in from India or China, you know, unfortunately have sort of disconnected and really cheapened the bicycle, the quality of the bicycle. And so we call them affectionately bicycle-shaped objects, or BSOs. The BSOs just simply don't function. Things literally fall off of them. And the suppliers there have just come disconnected from the end user, so it doesn't serve the end user's needs.
Right.
So what was really interesting about that program and what sort of evolved from that is FK looked at that and said, you know, instead of buying local bicycles, let's start supply really quality bicycles into the marketplace. And we as an organization have a motto is that all answers are found in the field. And so this is where the beginning of the Buffalo Bicycle came from, in working with engineers from SRAM, from Trek, from Cannondale, from Specialized, and working with our supplier to really start designing a bicycle appropriate for the difficult and challenging terrain that you find in Zambia and across the developing world.
Yeah, no, that's, and I think that's a huge distinguishing factor with you guys, is that when we first got into bicycles and we wanted to find someone to support. You know, we saw some programs where people were essentially getting bikes donated in the U.S., throwing them into a shipping container, and sending them off to another country, Central America, parts of Africa.
Yeah.
And what we realized quickly, we didn't participate in those programs, but we researched, and a lot of those bikes just break down within months. Because where are you going to find, you know, a Shimano or SRAM derailleur piece that goes on, you know, this Trek 6500 bike, right, that gets donated?
Right, right. And the issue is that the Shimano or the SRAM derailleur is not meant for that market. It's not meant for that condition. It's meant for the bike path here in Seattle or along the Lakeshore Drive. Or, you know, it's not meant for the really difficult conditions that you find out there.
Absolutely. Well, that's I was in Sun Valley this summer with FK for a few days and had a great time. And he just hit the story of World Bicycle Relief and his passion to serve, but then also to create this model of sustainability, to have the mechanics, the actual replacement parts, and the kind of these cottage industries of people that are actually helping fix the bikes. It's such a cool program.
Yeah, thank you.
A lot of you don't know the connection of World Bicycle Relief and MIR, but we were chatting last night about how we actually approached World Bicycle Relief several years ago. I was in Liberia on the west coast of Africa in 2011 working on our water projects, and I saw a couple of people using bikes, and they were getting ahead in life. They're getting to and from work.
Mm-hmm.
And I've always wanted to expand the MIR brand beyond bottles into this active lifestyle brand.
Right.
And so it was kind of a little bit of an unconventional route, but I thought, how do we get more people on the bikes? Let's go ahead and sell bikes,
mm-hmm.
and then we'll help support people like World Bicycle Relief, Boise Bicycle Program. And I just remember calling up, I think Katie was still, or I think she was at World Bicycle Relief at the time. Yeah. And I just called up you guys and said, hey, you know, I've got this crazy idea. We're going to sell bikes, and then we want to help give bikes to you guys in Africa. And
yeah.
You guys,
yeah.
I'm sure you guys get hit up all the time with people with crazy ideas. And
we like that, though.
Yeah, yeah. And it was cool because, you know, it was, you know, I think a lot of times people are like, click, you know, like, that's not going to work. And Katie's like, yeah, okay, well, we're here. So, you know, whenever you guys figure it out. And, you know, long story short, we connected. And a buddy of mine who used to work at REI took our bike into the REI buying office, and they agreed to meet with us. So we flew down or drove down. I wish we could fly at that time. We were too cheap. So we drove down to Vegas to Interbike, met with REI. They agreed to carry our bike line. So REI was our kind of main distribution partner. And then we've been able to support you guys ever since. And it's been fun to just see you guys being willing to let us support you guys and to be receptive to our crazy ideas. And
absolutely. No, we like that. That's fantastic.
Yeah. So it's, I think the thing that I was excited about was that there is this, this sustainability piece. You know, a lot of times with social enterprise, there's kind of this culture of just handouts. And we like to talk about more of hand-ups and tools.
Yeah.
Can you talk a little bit about why the bike is not a handout and it's actually a tool of empowerment and what that looks like over in Africa?
Thanks for that. And it's really important to us that not to do a bicycle dump.
Mm-hmm.
And sort of developing programs that highlight the efficacy of bicycles. It's not just about the bike. It's about the bicycle and what the bicycle can do and setting up systems and programs around that for sustainability. So working with our partners on the ground and working closely with the community, sensitizing them to whether it's a healthcare program or an education program, that there's community ownership of the programs and what the bicycle is meant to do. So if it's a healthcare program, they're volunteer healthcare workers that they continue to be volunteers to that healthcare program so that the bicycle is being used for a purpose. So it promotes the goals of the program that it's serving. In the education program, which is our flagship program, you know, it's that girl student goes to school. The bicycle is being used for household purposes, but it's really the purpose there is for education. And the only way you can do that is having your partnerships on the ground in the community. So you're engaging with the traditional leaders, you're engaging with the chief, the chieftainess, the headmaster, the parent-teacher association, all these things to support a program. Now, as far as the bicycle itself, you know, you can design a great bicycle and put it into the field, but like any machine, it's going to require maintenance, yep. Right? So we've trained over 1,300 field mechanics, and these are people that are selected in the community that ideally are already a mechanic. Ideally, they're underneath a tree or they're already, you know, repairing bicycles. And we bring them in for comprehensive training and a proper set of tools on the Buffalo bicycles and also some business skills. And the beauty of it is that they're trained prior to the distribution of these bicycles. So not only do they have the training, but then all of a sudden they have customers. And so creating that, you know, the free hand of Adam Smith, of creating that, those marketplaces and those entrepreneurs, and we've seen some fantastic success with that. And the other part of that that we've been really focusing on here in the last 18 months is a greater strategy as it relates to the distribution of spare parts. And because we do design the bicycle to be retrofittable to locally available spare parts, but there's a lot of quality spare parts on this bicycle too, and there's demand for that. And so how do we think about the supply chain that goes out from, say, in Zambia, from Lusaka into the far reaches of Zambia? That's a challenge. What we're working on now is putting in sort of a hub and spoke methodology. So we'll have a Buffalo bicycle.
Great analogy.
We like that. We have a Buffalo bicycle shops where people can come in and purchase Buffalo bicycles and also spare parts. And then being able, the spokes off of that would be the trained field mechanics or local dealers in spare parts. So we're seeing great success for them and a real uptake. Because we don't want to do just, you know, a bike dump. We were looking at sustainable impact. So whether it's our programming, our bicycle, our product development, our spare parts strategy, those are the things that are important to us. How do we have sustainable impact with the bicycle?
Yeah, and so those entrepreneurs can come in. Do they, in a sense, is there a difference in pricing that allows them to buy, say, wholesale, you know, kind of that understanding?
Yeah.
Would they come in and then redistribute those parts?
Exactly.
Cool.
Yeah, so there's a whole different pricing mechanism that goes into that. And the other part, as far as our model, as World Bicycle Leaf, that creates sustainability, is the fact that as we started delivering the Buffalo bike into the field, we got a lot of demand from the marketplace. So whether it's the individual farmer that wants to use the bicycle to carry milk to the dairy cooperative, or it's another nonprofit potentially that's looking to do a healthcare program and wants bicycles for their volunteers, we had this demand as far as we want this bicycle. And so what we did based upon that market demand is to set up a social enterprise itself. So we have World Bicycle Leaf, which is the not-for-profit, and then we have a for-profit subsidiary that's 100% owned by World Bicycle Leaf.
Okay.
And so that's how we serve our operational model, and that obviously leverages our impact as it relates to the number of bicycles that go into the field. And it also reduces our cost because we're able to do more bicycles on the same platform.
Yeah, more bicycles. So on the bicycle itself, mm-hmm. Can you describe why this is much different than the bikes that you first experienced, that FK first saw when he went over
sure.
there? What's the what is different about the Buffalo bike?
Well, affectionately, we do call it 50 pounds of love.
They are very heavy.
They are very heavy. they ride great, though, actually. Looking at this bicycle, we try to create it as bomb-proof as possible, basically. And so the first thing that you really notice about it is this rear carrier that's designed to hold over 200 pounds. So if you have to take a sick child to the clinic, or if you're taking a child to school, or another child's taking another student to school, or if you're taking your produce to the marketplace, you know, this is a utility vehicle. I mean, this is basically the SUV of the developing world.
Yep.
So it's very heavy duty. And instead of having handbrakes, which, you know, cable and housing really do not stand up well when you're talking dust, dirt, you know,
everything gets
in there. And so we work closely with our suppliers as it relates to designing and developing a rear kickback coaster hub.
Yeah, just kind of like the old school bikes when you were a kid.
Where
you'd have those skid competitions.
Exactly.
Have you guys seen that on the ground?
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Absolutely. So that's, you know, using that design and sort of thinking through how do we make this as strong as possible? And so whether it goes to, you know, working closely with Kenda, who supplies our tubes and tires, and talking about the rubber formulation and the tread and those type of things. So working closely with the component manufacturers to really up-spec. But there's an interesting challenge to it, too, is that, you know, you could design and develop a really great $500 bicycle, right? But then that's not affordable.
Exactly.
So you have sort of this engineering, you know, challenge where you got to keep the price of the bicycle within reach of people at the bottom of the economic pyramid.
Yeah.
And so that's what we've been able to develop with this. So we constantly work. We have a team of engineers that are in Taiwan that work with our suppliers, as well as a whole entire product development team in Africa. That's on the ground that is making that connection between the field and then our supply chain. And that's really what the differentiating factor is. The fact is that we're taking the same engineering process and talent, and we still work very closely with in the cycling industry with Specialized and certainly with SRAM and Trek and Giant to, you know, take the best practices of product development of engineering that's used at the top of the market for the development at the bottom of the market.
I love that you guys are able to actually leverage, you know, kind of this kind of general knowledge from so many different bike brands.
Exactly.
And then be able to take that manufacturer design in Taiwan and then come up with, I mean, because the tires on here are like automotive grade, like the formulation is different than a tire that you and I use on a Burke Gilman
trail.
That's
exactly right, yeah.
And then I think you might have mentioned it before, but the rack can hold about, what, 200?
200 pounds, yeah.
200
over
pounds.
Over 200 pounds, yeah.
Yeah, so you see, I mean, those milk jugs have to, I mean, I don't know how much those things weigh, but they are very
significant.
Heavy. Yep.
And we've designed carriers that go over the top of that, so it, you know, sort of holds the carrier, holds the milk canisters on either side of it, and one on top. So it hauls a lot.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, so it's kind of the pickup truck of Africa.
Absolutely.
So you guys have distributed over, what, 320,000 bikes now?
Yeah, 330,000, I think,
wow.
is where we are now.
That is,
yeah.
Like, that is incredible.
Over the last 11 years. Yeah.
And it's been, and that's across from Indonesia, East Africa.
It's in 18 different countries, but primarily where we have operations currently is in Zambia, Zimbabwe, Kenya, Malawi, Angola, and South Africa currently.
Okay.
Yeah.
Man, that's incredible.
Yeah, but we're launching a program this next year in Ghana. We're excited about, and we have good partnerships and done over 3,000 bicycles in Colombia.
Okay.
So working closely with a large corporation there doing the education program.
Yeah, that's fantastic.
Yeah, so we think there's great opportunity. We want to definitely put the world in World Bicycle Relief.
Yeah, that's good. not just East Africa, but all
right,
over.
Right.
Jenny, do you have any? Are there any questions on here that you're seeing? Do you have a question?
The program in Ghana is an education program. It's being funded by Mondelez. Mondelez owns the Cadbury brand.
I was going to say the chocolates, right?
Yeah, the chocolates, right. And they've been fantastic partners. And they've been doing something called, I think they call it the Bicycle Factory, over the last several years. And we reached out to them, or they reached out to us about 2 years ago to just sort of ask ideas about, you know, saw what we were doing, and is there a way for them to sort of replicate that type of program in Ghana, where they're trying to support the cocoa farmers and certainly do their corporate good. And the conversations just evolved to where, you know what, we want to do Buffalo Bicycles. Actually, we want to do your education program. Actually, can you do this program for us? So it's been a fantastic partnership with them, and we're looking forward to sort of growing that over the next several years. And we're seeing, you know, in doing the field assessment and going in and seeing the need, it seems like a great opportunity for us to sort of put our foothold into West Africa.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So on the education piece, you know, some of the things that we really enjoy and try to focus in on as a company is anytime we can empower girls or women in the communities. Because what we've seen, and other partners have highlighted this, that if you can empower the women in the community, that change actually happens.
Exactly.
Which is, says something funny about men, right? Like,
unfortunately, we're not the better sex here.
Yeah.
No, we do not, not the best gender.
Yeah. So with the education piece, what is that? We talked about it last night, but that that ability for this bike to be a tool and that transformational piece, because a lot of people who don't know about education over in East Africa, oftentimes it's given to the boys first because it's prioritized. But what does the bike do in that situation?
Well, it's interesting. I mean, we work closely with the Ministry of Education and the community leaders in different schools. And, you know, there is definitely a trend as it relates to gender equalization or gender improvement, because every study, like you said, every study that when you empower or you educate girls, it makes change. You educate a girl, you educate a nation.
Yeah.
And for every year of education that a girl gets or stays in school, it does magical things as far as increases her earning capacity. Those earnings go back into the family. It improves her health. She has fewer children later in life. It certainly improves her HIV and AIDS is decreased. So magical things happen with continued education. So with that in mind, as we started this program and has evolved, 70% of the bicycles go to girl students. And you know, I've seen a lot of things over in the 9.5 years I was in Africa, but the most powerful thing that I've seen is that look in the girl's eyes when she receives a bicycle and realizes somebody cares about my education. And the fact of the matter is, you know, this bicycle is most likely the most valuable asset that's going into that household. Okay, it's
totally
treasured. It's valued, it's treasured. Most of the time it's kept inside the house, not outside the house. And the fact that you're tying a girl's education to that bicycle changes things. All of a sudden it changes the negotiating strength of that girl as it relates to her education. So instead of potentially being sold into an early marriage, her education is valued. And we're seeing fantastic results for that. We're just launching in Zambia this month a two-year longitudinal randomized control study on the impact of the bicycles in the BEEP program, in the education program, specifically as it relates to girls' attendance, academic performance, and household empowerment, of the girls' negotiating skills.
Yeah, wow, very cool.
Yeah.
So on that note with education, is it, you know, a lot of times, you know, for us, it's easy to walk, you know, couple miles maybe, you know, at the most a day, or it's down the street, or it's to a Uber drive, you know, car that you get into. Can you describe a little bit of a typical community that you work in and how far some of these girls are actually walking or running to and from school before they get the bike?
Yeah, before they get the bike. And appreciate also in most of the communities that we're working in, the traditional roles and responsibilities of a girl child are pretty onerous. They're expected to wake up very early in the morning so they can fetch water, they can make the fire, they can clean the dishes, they can take care of the younger siblings, they can sweep around the house, And then after those things are done, they walk 10 kilometers or 6 miles one way. Now, that's pretty exhausting, as you can imagine. And a lot of times they either are tardy or show up late or don't attend at all. And certainly that's a challenge. But the other challenge that's starting to come to light more often is the issue of safety. And the fact is that girls walking long distances in these rural areas are vulnerable. And what we're finding, and specifically in our programs in Kenya, is that the reduction with the bicycle program, a reduction in the reported number of rapes and reported teen pregnancies, and that being attributed to bicycles. So that's something we're going to have to look more into. But the fact of the matter is that a girl is empowered with a bicycle, not only for her education, but also for safety.
Yeah, absolutely. I had, I believe I had a conversation with Katie, and I was kind of understanding, you know, the safety issue being walking really long distances and men being predatory, mm-hmm. but it was also that men would line up with their scooters or whatever yeah. else and say, hey, I'll take you to school for free. But of course, before they get to the school, they say, actually, it's not free. You need to perform X, Y, or Z. And so right. that was like a huge issue that I hadn't even, you know, thought right. about. And so, right. you know, this bike is a way for people to kind of negotiate around that and
exactly.
and get away from that. So it's not only like an economic engine, they're getting better education, it's a safer community.
Exactly.
Yeah. I mean, it's so incredible.
It is.
So 10 years, what did you do before World Bicycle Relief? And how did you just end up in Zambia, you know, just hanging out?
Yeah, growing up in Ohio, I never thought I was going to be, you know, running a bicycle organization in Africa. That certainly wasn't my aspiration growing up. But prior to World Bicycle Relief, I was 15 years an investment banker. Most recently in Washington, D.C. for 10 years, doing primarily IPOs and capital raising for financial institutions. And as I was approaching my 40s, at that point, I was sort of looking at, you know, what am I doing with my life? You know, what's the meaning here? Because I enjoyed what I was doing, and it was fulfilling, but it wasn't, I knew there was always a next chapter and to try to make an impact. And with that sort of mindset, randomly, through friends of friends, I went on a safari in Africa. Never been to Africa, never really a big desire to go to Africa, but yeah. it was just sort of this opportunity came up, and met FK and Leah Day on a safari, wow. randomly.
No way.
Through friends of friends, and spent time with them in the back of a safari vehicle in the Maasai Mara, and just really was blown away by them as individuals, because delightful individuals, but the fact that being successful in their own lives, that they were taking that success and giving back and yeah. doing something for good. And fast forward, went back to Washington, D.C., really, you know, kept the friendship up with FK and Leah, and the opportunities came together for me to go to Zambia with FK. In his typical FK fashion, he calls me up on a Thursday and says, hey, Dave, I'm going to Zambia on Sunday. Can you make it? And I did. And it was just sort of a leap of faith. And I got over there, and I saw the need. I saw the challenges of distance. I saw the lousy bicycle-shaped objects. And I saw this guy that had this vision and this passion and the capacity, the capability to make it work.
Right.
You know, this wasn't somebody that just liked bicycles. This is somebody that's the leader in the bicycle industry mm-hmm. that could really affect change. And within 6 weeks of that first visit in Lusaka, I was living there.
Wow. That is such a cool story. The yeah. coincidence that you guys run into each other. And they, I will say the thing that's interesting, at least over the past, you know, kind of 6 years of Mir and my life, is that when you kind of have that clarifying moment of what you want to do and where you're headed, yeah. like-minded people just start to appear, you know,
exactly.
like you look at our advisors that we have at our company, and it's like world-class individuals who I'm, you know, setting off on the track of Mir, never would have imagined,
right.
you know, Dennis Madsen, former CEO of REI, would be sitting with us, you know, every month, every other month, you know,
right.
speaking his wisdom to me. So it's just so cool that, you know, you meet in the back of a safari van, and next thing you know, you're 10 years on over in East Africa working on an incredible program.
Yeah, there is a plan out there. The fate does sort of play
yeah,
a heavy hand.
It yeah. works itself out. Yeah. The thing that's I find really fascinating with World Bicycle Relief is that, you know, with the Buffalo bike, it's gone from like 0 to 300,000 bikes, which to me is just incredible. Like, that's such a large number. Mm. But then the continued kind of innovation and developing cycle of the bike, where you guys work, East Africa, West Africa, now Colombia.
Mm-hmm.
what is next besides Ghana? Is there anything else that you guys are looking at that is fascinating to you guys?
Yeah, I think so. I think, you know, these first 11 years have been fantastic, and we're very, very blessed to have had such success in a short period of time, but we're just beginning. We really sort of see these first 10 years of our lifespan as sort of our infancy, and we've tried and tested a lot of things, and now we've sort of done the proof of concept. Mm-hmm. You know, we didn't know. A lot of the questions when we first started is, well, can we? What can we do as far as, can we set up an assembly facility? Can we set up a social enterprise? Can we do these programs of efficacy with bicycles and measure them? Well, yes, we can. So now the question that we're pivoting to is, what should we be doing? As an organization, what should we be doing as far as expansion, as far as partnerships? Mm-hmm. And so I really see this as our next stage, our adolescence as we go forward. And, you know, as FK likes to say, and I sometimes wonder, we should be doing 1 million bicycles a year.
Yeah.
I mean, 300,000 is a great number, and that's something to, but that is a drop in the bucket based upon the need. If you think about 500 million people in sub-Saharan Africa live in the rural areas, this is what they need.
Absolutely.
And so 1 million bicycles a year actually isn't that much. And there's no reason that as we start knocking on the doors and start showing the quantifiable impact based upon the data that we're collecting, you know, it just makes sense. This is a high return on investment in the developing world. And this is a tool that cuts all the different types of interventions that are taking place. So we're really excited about that next stage.
That's exciting. How do you get from, I mean, you got from 0 to 300. Mm-hmm. What ideas do you have to get from 300,000 to 1 million? I mean, what's kind of that piece that you guys need to connect?
I think it's the power of partnerships. And so when you talk about partnerships with governments, talk about partnerships with bilateral, so like the USAID or DFID in the UK, funding partners that are doing large-scale change, that incorporating a bicycle program into that, whether it's girls' education or whether it's healthcare programs, and sort of highlighting the efficacy of this bicycle and how that gets integrated into it, I think that's where our next step is. And really thinking about, how do you have tipping points in a country? In one of the countries we're going deep into in the coming year is Malawi. And Malawi fits all sort of the requirements as far as need, where we could have high impact. Bikes are very culturally appropriate there. And so we're really excited to explore that further. But do something, it's not just 5,000 or 7,000 bicycles. That's great, but Malawi needs 1 million bicycles.
Right.
So how do you make it happen?
Totally. Partnerships.
Partnerships.
So if you're listening, exactly, you can partner with World Bicycle Leaf. We've chosen to partner with World Bicycle Leaf outside of the U.S. So we've had a partnership here now for about almost 4 years.
Fantastic.
Which has been great.
Yeah.
A little bit pivoting on what you guys are doing as an organization. Mm-hmm. So you went from investment banking into World Bicycle Relief. Yes. You're doing good. What are some of the biggest challenges that you, I mean, you've been, what's great is you've almost been there from the beginning, so you've seen kind of the transition. Like, a lot of times people ask, you know, what are the biggest challenges at MIR? And how did you overcome them? And so it's a little bit of a lofty question, but like, what were some of the biggest challenges, or maybe are the biggest challenges, you know, on the field that, you know, you're like, holy cow, how do we get past this? Yeah.
Well, development work's not easy.
No.
And I had to learn pretty quickly when I landed into Africa, landed into Zambia, that sometimes Africa is going to win. And some days are not. Some days are very challenging. And whether that's, you know, we're facing, think about the countries that we're operating in. I mean, we're in Zambia, Zimbabwe, Kenya. Well, Zimbabwe is economic, you know, powder keg, and politically. You know, Zambia just went through some very difficult elections and is struggling. Last year, the Zambian kwacha was the worst performing currency against the dollar. So if you're pricing your cost of goods in dollars and you're selling in kwacha, watch out.
Yeah.
Yep. You better be able to negotiate that. You know, Kenya is coming up in an election this next year. They have some historical challenges as far as elections and how that could potentially go with election violence. You know, so those are, operating in this world is not easy. I mean, it does have some challenges to it. And sometimes we become impatient with that because we just think, you know, you can't sort of apply the lens that you use in the developed world in the developing world.
Right.
And that's where the challenges lie.
Absolutely. But you guys have done a great job of starting. A lot of times people just don't even start something. So it started, mm-hmm. you guys have built upon it, you've studied it, there's data, you're improving upon it. Mm-hmm. I mean, that's highly admirable because a lot of times nonprofits are just like throwing money at a problem and don't even research, you know, what's going on.
Well, a big part of our philosophy is the Japanese philosophy of Kaizen, which is the idea of continuous improvement. So mm-hmm. you have a plan, you execute that plan, you measure it, you learn from it, and then you evolve. And so I think we look at that from a product development standpoint with the bicycle, certainly programmatically, and also in our social enterprise. You know, how do we continue to do that? So that's, as I was talking about the spare parts situation, you know, how do you really start tackling that? I mean, that's a big challenge to try mm-hmm. to set up a distribution network into, you know, rural Africa. That's not an easy thing to crack.
Yeah, so, no, that's great that you guys kind of have that philosophy at MIR. I'm always hounding the team that it's progress, not perfection, right? Like,
right.
you never really arrive, which in one sense is a little bit, you know, disheartening
right.
some days where you're like,
right.
oh my gosh, we just want to get there, you know? But the reality right. is that you're building, you're improving.
That's exactly right. And I think the other success is, and an important part of it is that our team on the ground is, we have a Zambian country director in Zambia, we have a Kenyan country director, where my successor, as I'm, you know, now in this role in the U.S., is a woman in Kenya, so to be the managing director in Kenya. So I think making sure that we have that local context and that goes a long way.
Absolutely. That's very cool.
Yeah.
Awesome. Well, this has been a really great conversation. How can people find out about World Bicycle Relief and how can they help?
Sure. No, I appreciate that. Certainly, visiting our website in www.worldbicycleleaf.org and liking us on Facebook. Between now and the end of the year, we are doing a year-end appeal, which is a major part of our fundraising for the year to help us do these philanthropic programs in the educating girls programs. There's great, compelling information and videos on there that I would urge people to look at. So support in that way, and then also you know, reach out to us if you have some ideas.
Yeah, and it's not just, I would say for those watching, obviously money goes a long way and it's very much needed.
Mm-hmm.
Sometimes that's the biggest need is just finance, but there's also a lot of creative partnerships. You
that's
know, right. we sell a product and then give 5% of our revenue to great organizations like World Bicycle Relief, but then also Theo Chocolate is partnered with you.
Yep.
And so entrepreneurs, business owners out there, you know, there's an opportunity for you to be a part of this. So you
Absolutely.
May not sell bikes and you may not, you might not even ride a bike, but that's okay. You can definitely get involved whether your business wants to give back or do fundraisers for World Bicycle Relief.
Yep, absolutely.
So there's a lot of different ways to get involved. And if you're an investment maker and want to make a difference, you are your firsthand evidence that you can do that. My grandma
yeah.
always used to say it's how you make your money, not how much money you make, that matters. And that's always kind of stuck with me. So
yeah.
it's been a fulfilling ride at MIR, and I'm sure it's been a fulfilling ride for you at
absolutely
yeah World Bicycle Relief. So thanks for tuning in. Thanks for being on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Thank
and,
you.
Hopefully we'll see you over in Zambia.
Absolutely.
In 2017 with some fun stuff.
That'd be great.
All right.
Thank you. Thanks a lot, Brian.
Yeah.
This conversation was previously recorded during a MIR Live session at our flagship store in Seattle, Washington. MIR Flagship is a place to swap stories, gather before your next ride, walk, or run, and a spot to warm up with a coffee or cool down with a beer. An anchor in the Fremont community, it is a place to learn about the broader world. MIR is a product-to-project company where every purchase supports a trackable giving project. Visit MIR.com to learn more about our give.